Hello, everyone. My name is Colin. I'm from Scanline Media, and I have one guest and one regular. We'll do our regular first, of course, Jen.
All right. I'm Jennifer Uncle, and I'm also from Scanline Media.
And we are joined by a special guest today. Hi, Andy. How's it going?
Hi. I'm Andy. You can mostly find me on Twitter at Zetoson03. I've just, been talking with Colin and Jed for some time, and y'all invited me to do this podcast about Zelda, and I was very excited to do so. So thank you for having me on here.
Yeah, it's a delight to have you.
Totally.
It's always good to have other voices in, because, me and Jen can talk back and forth, and we do a lot, but, it's good to get more perspectives, and
sure.
You might have played more Zelda than both of us.
A little. Oh, okay. So how far deep have you gotten into Zelda so far, you two?
Well, my Switch play timer says that I've played around 28 hours. I've completed two of the dungeons. I have around 9 or 10 hearts and a partially completed second stamina bar.
Okay.
I don't know how useful that is when you can pretty much just jump to the end whenever, but that's something.
That gives me a decent idea, I guess. What about you, Colin?
I have done, I think, somewhere between 60 and 70 shrines.
Okay.
I have done one dungeon. I have the Master Sword. Mostly I've been doing a whole lot of tooling around. And I did, before I did any dungeons, attempt Ganon.
Oh, yeah. How'd that go?
It actually went really well until it bugged on me, which was not necessarily bugged. I don't want to spoil,
sure.
And so I will not do so.
Sure.
But the Ganon fight, if you have not done any of the dungeons, is a long multi-phase fight.
Uh-huh.
And in one of the very last phases, Ganon becomes invulnerable, except for when a certain thing happens.
Oh, okay.
And he never did the certain thing.
Oh, no.
He just ran around shooting lasers at me.
That's,
and I was like, okay.
That's,
well,
rough.
So I got really frustrated. And because that took a very long time to get to that point, because I had multiple tries, and there was a lot to learn,
mm-hmm,
in the multiple phases.
Right.
And then I lost, and it set me back to the beginning, and I was like, and also, with these auto-saves, if I keep doing this, it's going to make it so it saves over my open-world save, and I can't get back.
Ooh,
so
yeah.
Let's just abort this whole thing.
Sure. Yeah, okay, so I guess for me, I've completed 3 of the Divine Beast dungeons. I have the Master Sword now. I have about 12 or 13 hearts, and about almost 80 or 90 shrines almost done. Like, I've been playing it a lot. Like, I guess I just got sort of lucky that I had, like, a solid, like, basically 2 weeks off of work, and was just every day just going in and playing more of it. And I've been really, really enjoying it. But I did spend, I'm pretty sure, about 20 hours into the game before I even touched the first dungeon. With Sidon, our good red shark boy, who the internet and everyone has fallen in love with, including me. I've written in our notes here that Sidon is a very good boy.
He's got a good attitude. I like his attitude.
I was thinking about this earlier, and the best part about him is, like, you go to the other areas of the game, and there are these people that's like, oh, the descendant, or like, they don't believe it's you, or if it is you, Link, the hero of time, they're just sort of like, where have you been, or whatever. Sidon just sees you and goes, hey, Hylian, come help me out, I believe in you, and like, doesn't even figure out you're the hero of time for like a solid week or whatever. And it's kind of great how much he just straight up believes in you. It's very encouraging.
The Zora section in general is pretty great, because most of the other races, they've gone through a few generations of their people, so they wouldn't know what the legendary hero looked like if they Ewoked right up, which you do.
Mm-hmm,
but the Zora are basically like, oh, hey, Link, long time no see. You're supposed to be dead, huh? Or at least super old, but I guess you're not, so let's go get things done.
Yeah, like, you have the Like, there's this one girl, like, in the Zora kingdom that's just like, oh, Linny. And you're like, Linny? It's like, yeah, that was the nickname I gave you, like, 100 years ago. It's like...
Don't you remember? It's only been 100 years.
Yeah, it's only been... Oh, right, we live, like, 500 years. It's kind of bonkers. They're, like, they're the under-the-sea elves of this universe.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of, it's always, the Zora have always had that kind of, like, that elfy thing going on, and, like, doubling down with it, with their ridiculously long lives is kind of interesting.
Yeah. It's also just very fun. It, just Sadat, of course, just being a very, very good boy, helping you out. And, it was actually in that dungeon, which I was thinking about, like, how buck wild would it be to try and do, like, a naked as possible run? Like, in this game, except I realize you literally have to have, like, the Zora shirt. So I, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, it'd be really fun to do, like, a pantsless run of this entire game.
Yeah, there are various points within the various worlds where they put up gates to ensure that you're wearing that specific costume for whatever you're doing. Like,
yeah,
when you're on Death Mountain, if you're not wearing the heat gear, you're gonna catch on fire.
Yeah, you
and, are. Yeah. It's things like that.
Sure. I wonder if it would even be possible, and not just because of the environmental hazards, but there is a problem of, like... I mean, I guess you could just run straight to Ganon if you wanted, but if you tried to play the game normally, mm-hmm. I think a lot of key NPCs would refuse to talk to you until you put pants on.
That would be great.
I mean, that's a thing. If you take off your shirt, there are NPCs who will not advance their dialogue until you put a shirt back on.
I love how the ancient weapon guy won't talk to you at all unless you're naked. Like, no, I don't believe you at all. You have to take everything off.
Oh, yeah.
Or else I won't talk to you.
Oh, yeah, that guy. That guy, right, who just has his own pose and guitar riff whenever he poses. It's so good. Oh, this game is so goofy. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think we are with the majority of the gaming population and thinking that this is the best Zelda they've made in a very long time. If not ever, that one's hard to argue.
Well, I'm going to have to, like, take at least a week off of, like, because I've been playing it nonstop, so mm-hmm. it'd be hard for me to judge it. But it does very much feel like this is, like, the Zelda game they've always wanted to make. Where, you know, you had the original game was just one big open world, and you could kind of, in theory, go everywhere, but it gently guided you along. And it feels like the Zelda team finally got at this point in which they could really execute on the vision of the first game. Nothing to say that the other games were bad or anything. Like, I still really like Ocarina of Time, Link to the Past. I am a defender of Twilight Princess. I had a really good time with Twilight Princess. But, like, in the interviews on Nintendo's, like, YouTube channel, they talk about how this was the game they've always kind of wanted to make.
See, here's the thing. I don't believe them.
Yeah, of course. Take everything they say with a big grain of rock salt. Yeah.
If that's the game they've always wanted to make, how come they spent 2 decades not trying? They've gone in the exact opposite direction for generations of making the game more and more and more locked down and mm-hmm. limited. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think what it was from what I think they are trying to convey and failing to convey, I don't think they're lying. I think their statements are misleading.
Sure.
I think what they're trying to convey is that they had a moment, perhaps after Skyward Sword kind of did not do super well with the population. They had a moment where they're like, wait a minute, what did we set out to do? How did we end up here?
They sort of lost their way for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And it took pretty much recreating the team from the ground up to actually make it happen.
Right. No, I agree with that. Like, I never played Skyward Sword, but the general reaction beyond, like, the inevitable, you know, Game Informer, GameSpy, like, 10 out of 10, so they can get on the box reviews or whatever. Just sort of everybody looking back, said, like, Skyward Sword was an okay game, but it wasn't a good Zelda game, you know, or something akin to that, because they focused so I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I have a disproportionate beef to the general populace with Skyward Sword, and that is partially because my Wii is not... I probably had worse motion control issues than most people. Oof. Let's say that. I probably had some hardware issues.
Right.
But I just... It felt like that game was so completely misguided. We actually, there's a really great article up on the site by a friend of mine, Ethan, mm-hmm. who sort of... He analyzes Skyward Sword and, like... Basically, Skyward Sword was supposed to be the best game ever made. It was supposed to be perfect in every way and sort of points out all these design decisions that were leading to the ultimate game that just sort of fell flat on their face.
Interesting.
And I think it kind of was, in a way, a product of hubris. And I think that's a lot of what Zelda has struggled with is sort of these intros that are so tailored because Zelda... Don't worry. Nintendo's going to hold your hand. If we let go, you're going to get confused. You're going to get lost. You're going to have a bad time. Let Nintendo hold your hand and show you where the fun is.
Right.
It's like, no. Let go. It's okay.
How do you think it compares to your favorite game of all time, Majora's Mask?
So... Majora's Mask is such a, like...
I can feel the pivot. I can feel the pivot, like, in my soul there.
Go ahead. It is possible that another article on the site of me basically saying, like, if you don't think Majora's Mask is the best game of all time, you're a moron. Because, you know, hey, why not?
Okay.
But, like, the thing is, with Majora's Mask, obviously, like, the experience of playing... Breath of the Wild is miles ahead of anything Majora's Mask has, obviously.
Right.
But Majora's Mask is so full of tone and meaning and atmosphere in a way that I'm not saying Breath of the Wild isn't, but it's not going for this surreal, creepy, amazing thing that Majora's Mask is. Sure. So it's a very weird comparison.
Right. Well, I think there are bits and pieces of that. Like, it's obviously not the main focus, but I'm just thinking about how multiple times in Breath of the Wild, I've, like, been exploring this space, and it just surprises me out of nowhere with, like, mm-hmm. weird things going on that are clearly on some sort of clock or schedule, like an invisible whatever, but I started catching on to that. Like, the main example, and I just love this because it was just so silly, there is a tropical-like area in the game, and then, like, the lower middle part of the map or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I had scaled this waterfall, and I found this, like, these sets of magnetic rocks in a lake. And I just thought, oh, this is very clearly just a Korok puzzle, you know, to get one of the seeds and some good equipment, right? So it's starting to rain really hard. I have the rubber equipment on because I gotta be shockproof and all that. And... there is a ball and chain right in the middle of it. And as I was picking up the rock with the magnetism, and I dropped it right in the middle of the thing, out of nowhere, the thunder dragon just shoots straight up through the lake and knocks me flat on my ass onto the other side. And I'm just, like, absolutely, like, shocked because I had only seen those dragon things, like, at a distance. Like, I recognize that, like, yeah, I have found the spawn point for this thing, but it was just kind of wild to me that, like, I tried doing it again to see if I could recreate the result. And no, just at certain times of day, the thing comes out. But I felt like, I like the idea that, and this is what some of the things that Majora's Mask does that I think is really effective, is that it has something resembling a living, breathing world. It obviously can't because it's still a game and it has its limitations, but its main point is trying to sell you on this idea that this world exists without your input. And I'm a big fan of that kind of thing. Like, one of my favorite games is Animal Crossing, mostly because I like the idea of a game that goes on without my input or presence. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what that says about me, but I've always enjoyed that idea, that knowing, like, even though I haven't booted Animal Crossing on my 3DS for the better part of, I don't know, like, a month or whatever, you know, people are, like, animals are still doing their thing. And in Breath of the Wild, I think it really sells the idea that this is a living, breathing world that you're interacting with that is only, that is changed by your input, but it implies that it would go on regardless.
I'm curious, So, Jen, I've always thought of you as a fairly objective-minded gamer. My experience from afar, as we're both playing through games at the same time, has been you kind of cruising through at a fairly rapid clip. And I feel like, anecdotally, the stories I've heard about, like, for example, you going to do the Zora dungeon with four hearts, sounds like maybe you did some of that here. What has your, like, you know, I played for a week and a half before I even tried to figure out where a dungeon was on the other side of the thing. So how has your experience been, it seems to me like you've been a little more eyes on the prize. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but
I started off that way. Like, that's just the way that I approach most of these games. The only reason that I even ended up getting this Breath of the Wild in the first place was, one, I needed something to play on my Switch, and two, Colin had more or less convinced me that the survival elements, which I typically hate more than anything else, are pared down in this to a degree. And I pretty much started doing the thing that I usually do. I went into shrines whenever they were along the path for where I was headed, but for the most part, I just kept going along. And the thing about coming across barriers in this and not being able to get past because you're not leveled well enough, in other open world games like The Witcher, that immediately makes me go, okay, I'm going to turn this off because it's a hassle to get over to this other place. I don't know what's the situation with my weapons. Zelda is very upfront about everything. And it makes
saying, like, yo, dog, you can't come in here. You're going to get your butt kicked in, like, 5 seconds.
Yeah, it doesn't say that explicitly, like, in terms of having signs or whatever, but it does do a thing where it's very easy to die if you're going into an area unprepared.
Oh, like me in Goron City multiple times.
Yeah. But the nice thing is about that in this one, it's incredibly easy to teleport immediately back to one of the towns. Even if you're in the middle of combat, there's no, oh, you can't fast travel when there's enemies nearby.
Oh, yeah, like the Fallout 3 or, like, general Bethesda model of you can't fast travel because enemies are around.
Yeah, so it's basically very easy to, it loads up super quickly when you die. You can jump to another place if you don't have the money to get the arrows that you need. You can go hunting for that and cook something. If you don't have the weapons that you need to hunt and cook, you can basically run to a nearby sword that they always have in some area of the town.
And kind of work your way up. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a very understandable chain here where if there's a piece missing, you can always go down a rung and get exactly what you need to get to further power yourself up and get through whatever you need to get to. And that, to me, having that very clear delineation where it's not spelling that out entirely, but it's something that you can pick up on pretty easily, makes this game so much more fun than pretty much any other hardcore survival game that I've played.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree with Jen there. Like, I bounce off of survival games like, yeah, I don't know, like a rubber ball on a steel, like, door or whatever. I just don't stick to them at all. I think I maybe tried playing one or two, but I never really got into its core loop of gather materials and then do this thing, do that thing. I like that this game, like, pares it down so it's understandable without doing the thing where it is, like, we're going to make it super easy. Like, I still felt like there was a challenge there to find the correct materials, find the right weapons, but it just taught me to, like, better take advantage of my map of, like, oh, you know, monster X, Y, and Z are here, so I can load up on this resource, or I can go to this area and get these items to help me progress, like, something, or the main thing that's been taking up a lot of my time is leveling up all the armor. I've been really enjoying that to a certain degree, because you do have to hunt, like, for the ingredients to you know, upgrade your stuff, but it doesn't feel like I have to, like, I'm trying to think of how exactly to word it, but just that is, I find the process frustrating, but kind of like in a good way, like, you know, if you've played any of the Souls games, which I know this game has, like, made that comparison before, and inevitably any discussion eventually compares itself to Souls or whatever, so let's just get it out of the way. But, you know, it's, you have that good sort of thing where you're not necessarily slamming your head against a problem over and over until a solution presents itself. You are moving through it at a slow but a deliberate pace, if you know what I mean. So I do enjoy that aspect at the very least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it does do a good job of making you, like, it presents a main story and you start to go along that main story, and then it presents roadblocks in a way that make you want to find ways around them.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I felt like I was never forced to go onto the critical path, and in fact, I think the game is built in such a way in which it encourages you to go off the critical path, and even comes up with, like, I think an interesting story reason for it, of just like, dude, right now you just have some underwear and a stick. You can't go fight Ganon yet. You gotta go out there and get some stuff.
Yes, I can.
Well, I cannot wait until the first speed run of that happens. Of, oh, like, yeah, like, no shirt, no pants, just a stick. Like, you know, procure on site, you know, Ganon runs. Those are gonna be bonkers.
Pretty intense.
And speaking of bonkers, I know Narcissia Wright, I don't know how you pronounce her name, or, you know, the streamer who does Legend of Zelda stuff, she posted some videos that people have been making of, like, skipping major parts of the, you know, shrine dungeons that are pretty buck wild. I kind of love it.
I'll have to check those out. I haven't seen
those. Oh, yeah. Just, like, check her Twitter or whatever. Which kind of, you know, I really like the shrines even when they annoy me. Because at the very least, I feel like even if I get to a shrine and, like, I just don't like it, I know it's over in, like, 5 minutes. Versus, like, you know, in a previous Zelda game, if you did not like the whatever gimmick that dungeon had, you're stuck with that gimmick the whole time you're in that dungeon. Like, you don't have any choice. You better get good with the hook shot or whatever, but, you know, otherwise you're not advancing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's no escape from it.
At the same time, though, the actual dungeons are pretty much designed, it's not a case of, we're going to stick with one theme for this dungeon, we're going to stick with the same theme for every single dungeon.
Right.
They're always manipulating these great beasts to unlock something, or basically rotating something somewhere, and it's really... It's a really tiring experience to get through one of those dungeons.
Oh, yeah. I was more talking about the shrines, but also to your point, I don't like the Divine Beast-like dungeons all that much either.
Like, I almost wish there weren't dungeons in this game. And not because I don't... I mean, I've only done one. I've only done the Divine Beast Ruto in the Zora realm.
Which is probably the better one that I've run into.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I mean,
it wasn't bad, but oh, dear.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of rough. The other two are rough, and I'm still about to get to the Rito one, but anyway, continue.
I just, like, it doesn't feel like the game needs them. I get that there needs to be some sort of, like anchoring dramatic points in the middle, and I can appreciate that, but I kind of just, like... I like running around and doing shrines and climbing towers and sneaking past camps of enemies that could one-shot me if they saw me.
Yeah.
And then just, at some point, I defeat Ganon because I'm like, okay, I want to see the credits now.
Mm-hmm.
Not because that's the conclusion of my quest. It's just sort of like, nope, okay.
Now I'm ready. Good now. Now I'm ready to bust out the doors.
So, I don't know.
Well, like, the thing is, so, one comparison, and this is on the Divine Beast stuff. One comparison in my head is, like, when I'm fighting some of these monsters, like the, you know how you're in the open world, they're the giants, they're the big rock monsters or whatever you can fight. I was getting some real Shadow of the Colossus vibes with fighting some of them. And how super dope would it have been of, like, you can have the Divine Beast, but it's like, yeah, you gotta fight them. Like, instead of a dungeon, it's a big old, you know, because it feels to me like the central, like, verb of this game is climbing. You know, you're attempting to get to greater and greater heights. I think that it's not so much a missed opportunity, it just seems like a sort of me thinking of like, what it had been cool of to take down the divine beasts is like, you have to crawl all around them so that instead of you're going inside them, in which you feel like you're just in this space that is just within them and then just dealing with stuff, how cool would it have been to like, you have to plan and figure out, all right, I'm going to have to fly in during this thunderstorm. And yeah, you know, like I'm thinking about the one I'm thinking about is the Gerudo camel that you fight later.
Oh, yeah.
And like, how cool would it have been to like somehow like find the right materials or devise some sort of tactic to get on top of the thing to deactivate it or restart it or whatever. Then you have your fight with the like boss inside of it or whatever. Like I feel like that would be more in line with what appears to be the main thesis and the main verbiage of the game is, which is, hey, you see that thing? You should totally go climb it and explore it.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like also the divine beasts, like, I feel like they were going for sort of like a living dungeon kind of idea and then ended up de-emphasizing it because they couldn't pull it off.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And if you had to actually struggle with the beast itself, that might be a little more, like, you kind of do that, obviously, with Rudo, where you have to, you know, flip all over it and shoot the shock arrows and stuff.
Yeah, which that's probably, like, that's the reason I like that Divine Beast, like, quest so much, because it's like I'm teaming up with Sidon, my, you know, our new red shark boyfriend, to, you know, you're on his back, you're firing these arrows, like, it's a really intense thing, and it just reminds me of some of the best fights in Shadow of the Colossus, which were you and your horse just running around trying to figure out how to deal with these things.
They didn't give Link a voice because otherwise he would accidentally call Zidane aggro.
So I love Shadow of the Colossus a whole bunch, and one of my favorite moments was I was falling off of like a big turtle thing. I was like plummeting towards the ground. I see aggro in the distance just bolting between this beast's legs, and I grab onto aggro as we dash by. It was really dope. And oh god, that sidebar, but that game's super good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of good. Yeah, so, but other than that, also the voice acting within the Divine Beasts, like, when you get to them, that's when you get the major voice acting bits, and man, the voice acting is rough.
But, inside the, okay, only with Rudo, because I don't know about the others, inside the Divine Beast, Mipha's voice acting still has some problems. It is noticeably better, and do you know why?
Why is that?
Because it's fucking 1995 again, and they didn't redo the lip syncing, and they had to fucking match the lip sync for the English lines to the Japanese. Like, what year is it?
Yeah. I mean, that's the stuff that, like, you know, you have Crispin Freeman telling stories of sitting in a studio in the early 2000s, just like watching the lip syncing and trying to match his voice to that. It's like, it's 2017. You don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Unless you work for Nintendo.
Clearly.
Yeah. Mipha herself, basically the English voice acting has that airy sort of sound to it. I think Colin brought that up at some point, but, the closest thing that I can think of is not any sort of actual... Well, the closest thing I can think of wasn't actually any sort of serious show. It was the freaking Ghost Stories dub where there's that Christian lady that's like,
yes!
You're all going to hell! She sounds exactly
praise
like that.
Praise Jesus!
What has happened?
Oh my god! Oh, Colin, have you not seen Ghost Stories?
What the fuck are you people talking about?
Oh my god.
Jen, you need to see that.
After the podcast, we need to send you some links, but oh my god, that is, I'm not gonna unhear it now, Jen. Thanks.
Mipha's grace is ready. Praise Jesus.
Yeah, it's the show doesn't hold up super well these days because it's super regressive in certain ways, but it has some pretty great jokes in
there. It has some pretty good goofs. Alright. For folks who don't know, Ghost Stories was this, like, crappy mid-90s or whatever? an anime that came out that was kind of like trying to ride on Inuyasha's like success or whatever. And some company got the rights to it, and instead of doing a serious dub in which they actually translate the stories, the people working on it just said, just say whatever you want. So basically all the voice actors, like Greg Ayers and some of the other guys, were just like doing improv the entire time. And yeah, and Jen, you're right, like some of the jokes are pretty some of them are pretty regressive and like, you know, very of time and place, and they're not great, but there was something admirable at the time, and still at this point I admire it, of like, just, we bought this license for like a dollar, let's just have fun with it. Like, I remember hearing a story of Greg Ayers saying he wants to redub ghost stories like every 5 or 10 years with new voice actors and updated jokes.
That would be pretty amazing.
That'd be it'd be pretty great. But oh man, now, like, I was looking up, you know, so before we started recording, I actually started looking up some of the voice actors for the game, and I could only find one voice actor for the Japanese version, Yu Shimamura. She is the voice of Zelda, but she was also the voice of Annie Leonhart from Attack on Titan. So, like, the Japanese dub is very good of what I've listened to. And that's just not just because I'm a huge weeb and like love Japanese stuff. Like, I've heard bad Japanese voice acting before, and it could get rough, but it was pretty good. But I found some of the other English voice actors. Bill Rogers is the voice of the king that you meet at the beginning of the game, and the Great Deku Tree. He's mostly known for voicing a bunch of Pokemon.
Sure.
My favorite one, in which he was the voice of Bonsly, Sundisk, and Timber.
Why not?
Yeah, no? Why not? Why not?
Yeah.
The only
one I recognized was the one who plays the Gerudo Guardian, who also does Major in the most recent Ghost in the Shell anime series.
Yeah, I saw
and then
that.
Jen was like, isn't this the most obvious thing in the world? How can you unhear this? And I'm like, Jen, 90% of people have no idea who the hell that is.
I know what Jed's talking about, and I appreciate the comparison. Yeah, no, like, she's done some stuff. Also, like, I'm looking at the list here, like, voice of Julie in Street Fighter V, which Street Fighter V had a great cast, but just really underutilized, but that's a whole different podcast. The voice of Ymir in the English dub of Attack on Titan. Not many stuff I super recognize, but my favorite one, because his name is just great, Sean Chiplock, who's the voice of the Rudo champion Rivali, who voiced recently Santa in the Zero Escape redub. He also did two voices in Freedom Planet, which, man, Freedom Planet's a good game. And my favorite one, the voice of Rash in Killer Instinct.
Man. Oh wow.
Yeah,
so this disproves the one theory I had working, which is maybe there was a writer's strike thing? I guess not. I guess they just did a bad job.
No, I think for half the cast, because, like, I actually kind of like the performance of the Rudo champion. He's just a total dick the entire time. I kind of love it. But you look at some of the other voice actors, and their only credited role, according to what I can find, is just what they did in Breath of the Wild. Which is just a little upsetting, because, like, I want to find, this was the first time in which the Legend of Zelda franchise had voice actors. They really should have, like, knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, the first time, but we don't speak about the CDI game.
We don't talk about the CDI. I actually own a disc or two of the Zelda TV show. Also, speaking of Street Fighter V, the voice of Urien in English is the voice of the king in Great Deku Tree. So,
Man, he's good in that.
Yeah, I actually, like, I don't love the Urien voice in Street Fighter V, but it's still very good. I think the Japanese is better, but, you know, I think we've pretty much established that part. But
yeah.
I'm just saying, like, Nintendo really should have looked at this and, like, okay, we really need to bring our A game here, because we've never really given these people a voice before. And, I mean, it's not a huge detriment. I mean, there's only, like, what, 12 or 13 cutscenes in the entire game. Like, there's not many opportunities for voicing, but that just means it needs to be more, like, solid at that point. And, you know, the voice acting in Star Fox 64 still holds up to this day, so we know Nintendo can bring it. I love it.
I hear it on a fairly regular basis, thanks to my nephew. And you know what? It's still fun.
I have a Japanese copy, and the Japanese one is very good. I don't recognize any of the actors, but, like, Fox in that game sounds like a Red Ranger, and he's so good.
Oh, man.
Yeah. He just has a very, like, ikuze, you know, kind of thing. It's very good.
So, okay. We talked a little bit about the negatives, but let's talk about the real negative thing here, right? The biggest problem with Breath of the Wild.
The biggest Rudo elephant in the water in the room.
It is good that I'm out of towers to climb.
Yep.
Because if I had to climb another tower and it started raining again, I would probably break my Switch.
Yeah, I feel it. That, real talk. So, like I said, I was playing Breath of the Wild like an hour ago before we started. I was climbing up this mountain, right? Like, just the side of the hill, it starts raining. I'm just like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. And I'm just trying to get to the top because I'm like maybe 15, 20 feet away from the top and I slid all the way back to the bottom. I was like, come on.
Yeah. It's like, yeah.
It's a little frustrating.
I think everyone has stories like that at one point or another. And it's especially bad if you happen to choose one of the towers with all the spikes on it from Black Goo. Because then you're just gonna be totally dead.
Yep.
And I like the weather throwing a, I mean, like, okay, it's been said by people smarter than me, but Breath of the Wild is channeling a lot of the spirit of Far Cry 2, wherein complications and sabotaging people's plans is a good thing because it makes the game more fun.
Sure.
The weather in general is a good thing. But, like, lightning screws your ability to fight effectively. That's interesting. Rain screws your ability to play the game, so you should probably just set the Switch down and go do something else for a while.
Yeah, like, and yeah, to that point, you're right. Like, when it's a lightning strike, I get an interesting decision of, like, oh, do I put away my strong items so that I can put on my, like, shock-resistant, like, rubber armor, which may not be as good defensively, but it won't get me zapped to death? Or do I keep my sword out for a few seconds and try to time it where I get a few solid hits, then unequip it, right? Like, it becomes an interesting gameplay choice. When it starts raining, you're right, you just can't do anything. Like, I was, like, I think early on to the game, I was, climbing a mountain, and I found a little alcove to stand on to recover my stamina, and the rain started falling, and I was basically sitting there for 15 minutes, which was, like, kind of picturesque for a time, but, like, after 5 minutes, that gets old, and I'm just sitting there, like, on my couch, like, scrolling through Twitter, because I was trying to, like, get to this point. I didn't want to fast travel to another point, but, it was just really, it was frustrating. Like, even just the introduction of, like, an item to like, get rid of that penalty would be okay, but then at that point, what are you even doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it even, I feel for the people who ended up skipping the Zoro path entirely, like the path where you can just walk through without having to deal with being pushed down by the constant rain, and somehow went over to the side and ended up climbing up somehow that way.
Right.
That takes a lot of courage.
Yeah. I ended up actually, so the bridge where you meet Prince Zaun for the first time and find out that the place is locked in permanent rain and all the and then he leads you on the gauntlet, like 10 feet away from that is a shrine on top of a cliff. And so I hadn't walked forward enough to trigger that cutscene. I didn't know it was going to rain forever. Mm-hmm. And I sat down my Switch and waited. And I waited a very long time. And I was like, it's just never going to stop raining. Right. It's just never going to stop raining.
Never gonna stop.
And I'm like, it's like, and I like, so many times I turned to walk away and I was like, but it's right there. I just need to be a little more patient.
Right. Right. Because, oh, that's rough.
Drove me crazy.
You're right. It's like, even it, like, I would accept it if it was just like, I liked at least there was a story justification in that area. It was like, oh, mm-hmm. Rudo's going nuts, so it's just raining all the time.
And sure, once I found out, it's like, oh, okay, that's fine.
And it gave you a gauntlet to run through, and it became interesting. But again, you're right, like, sometimes I wish the weather would just, like, cool it. Like, you could even still have the weather, just, you know, don't make it affect my climbing, which is my main way of interacting with this game. Like, mm-hmm. like that's where, the like, my frustration will come in. But now it's like, you know, I'm far enough in the game in which I just, like, I guess I'll have to be patient, but I don't know. I wish it wasn't there, but yeah. Rain sucks.
I wish there was, but I do wish there were more other types of weather effects. I would really get down with some hail. That would be fun. Oh,
yeah. And, like, you're just constantly, like, every now and again, you'll, like, take damage or whatever, but, like, so are the enemies in the area, or they, like...
Unless you're wearing, like, heavy enough gear.
Yeah.
Or...
Yeah, he could. Oh man, some hail would be good, or like windstorms.
I would really love just really powerful wind, so that like basically making like arrow shots is almost impossible, but not completely impossible.
You just have to
you get the amazing gif of a person like turning like 90 degrees just firing completely the other way and getting a headshot.
They just like turn around, raise their thing like straight up into the air. They position the camera in such a way they send like a bomb arrow just like perfectly into the middle of a Moblin camp. It'd be pretty dope. I actually really like, so in Gerudo Desert, every now and again, you will have these pockets of sandstorms that will completely take away your map, which,
Great.
Not for long. Like, it's not, like, to me, it wasn't that frustrating, because it was, like, I was still around places that I was, like, I was in the middle of, like, there's a quest that you can do in the game, which also speaks to, like, the really great quest and environmental design. That the fact that you can go on a quest in this game and not recognize that you're on a quest is kind of incredible. Anyway, like, there are these sword statues pointing the way through, like, just this area of the desert. And a sandstorm, like, went through. And I started looking for those statues again to, like, guide my way through. And that's, I think that's part of the thing of the open world design that I love is, and I mentioned this, you know, on Twitter some time ago, where... I remember I auto-completed a quest in which, like, at a stable or whatever, and I loved it because it, again, adds to that feeling of this is a living world. I don't have to go to the old man to tell me, hey, there's some goblins on the hill that we need someone to take care of. He'll just see, oh, looks like you already took care of it. Hey, here's some money. Like, I like that a lot. Like, because it's really frustrating to play an open world game. Like, and I admit, I don't play many of them. I mostly played, like, Fallout 3 and New Vegas. I played a lot of Saints Row the Third.
I've played far too many of them.
Probably more than I have, but, like, I just have a hard time with these open-world games that I have to spawn in the mission, apparently. Which I recognize in earlier, like, console generations, that was just sort of a necessity of the technological limitations you were dealing with. But now, like I said, it's 2017 now. I shouldn't have to, you know, go up to the old man to spawn in the goblins I need to fight. Like, it just sort of just needs to be there. And it takes a lot of forethought, and it takes a lot of effort, but hey, this game took 4 years to make, and it shows in, like, a good way.
Yeah. I don't know, I feel like there's a bunch more stuff we could talk about, but I kind of want to turn the conversation... because we could talk about this forever.
And I would play this forever, probably. Like, why would you even buy Skyrim on the Switch at this point?
Well, it sounds like, then, you're not super interested in what's next for Zelda, because that's what I'm curious about, is where do you go from here?
Oh, huh. That is... Now, I was sort of pondering that. Like, as I'm playing, you know, of course, putting in 90 hours or whatever, and I'm probably, after we finish the podcast, I'm probably going to play for another hour or two because I just love it so much. And I think about, where the heck do you go from here? And I would love a Breath of the Wild 2. Like, just the same thing, but Nintendo's not really known for doing that. And I think that's actually a good thing in a certain way. But anyway, go ahead.
They have kind of been known for doing the same thing with Zelda for a super long time, but I think that the best way forward for this in particular is... I mostly think about Zelda in terms of their settings, not what they actually do, which is, in retrospect, kind of a mistake given what Breath of the Wild did now. Mm-hmm. But overall, I'd really like to see what would happen if... Not necessarily the thing where people talk about, oh, Zelda and Link switching roles or something like that. And just having...
Which I would dig, but, you know.
Yeah. I was thinking more along the lines of going a bit back to Wind Waker, where Zelda was actually helping you out and was kind of your partner in several parts. Just having...
Spirit Tracks.
Yeah, like that. Except for a whole game and in a mainline Zelda. Just having a companion with you to... kind of help you out and do various things
like,
with.
You mean like actually nail a co-op Zelda game that isn't just Four Swords Adventures, which I like those games, but...
Triforce Heroes, it... No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I don't know about actually making it co-op. I just think that it would be nice to have some sort of companion with you that talks.
I mean, okay. So here's a comparison, right? Here's one that I'm about to make. That ride this one through with me.
Mm-hmm. I
have
buckling
a lot of
in.
Problems.
I'm buckling in. I'm just getting ready for this.
A lot of problems with BioShock Infinite.
Oh, I think but we can all agree that the game has
way,
some problems.
Yeah, but like the way, like from a gameplay and mostly from a dialogue writing standpoint, Elizabeth was implemented into that game was really neat. Where like during combat she would like observe what you're getting low on and run around the battlefield and like toss weapons to you and stuff.
Sure.
And that was interesting. And I think, I mean, she felt like a companion with you on that journey in a way that NPCs very rarely do. And I think there is a way you could do it where I don't have a particular opinion on whether it's Link or Zelda as the main character. I guess it would be cool to see it as Zelda, but you know, like, I don't know. There is that part of my brain that would go, but then it's not the same.
Right.
It's like, oh, shut up, brain. You're stupid.
Shut up, brain.
but you know, having a Zelda where Breath of the Wild is such a solitary game, and it's still really about people. Mm-hmm. You still have amazing moments in villages, but I don't think a Zelda game has made me feel as alone in a good way, in a nice way, but as alone as Breath of the Wild has. And I would be really interested to see Zelda do the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Do a game that's very much about people and their interactions and their relationships.
You know, it's great that you bring that up, because that just makes me remember one of my... I had this idea for like a Zelda game, like a Zelda-ass Zelda game that is not about her basically going on the adventure that Link was, because you're not taking advantage of her character at that point. I want diplomacy Zelda. I want Zelda dealing with like Hyrule politics of like trying to keep the entire kingdom happy. Like, oh, what's Link got to do? He's got to hit some things with a sword. Zelda, however, has to like juggle the happiness of like the Zoras and the Gorons and the Gerudo and the Rito at this point. Like, just all that, like, you know, a Mass Effect has been on my mind lately because of funny reasons. But I always thought about my favorite parts of Mass Effect was those, like, inner politic, like, that politicking part of it, of, like, the quarreling between the different, like, races and the council and that kind of thing, and trying to interact.
It was negotiating on the migrant fleet.
Right. And it's like, I mean, I don't know how well, like, everyone, when they think of Zelda, they think of, like, some sort of action game. I would love to have, like, some sort of, like, dialogue-centered, like, adventure which you are playing as Zelda, but she's just dealing with, like, the day-to-day of the kingdom. Because we've always dealt with, like, Hyrule in peril. Like, Hyrule is about to explode, and you gotta deal with it. You gotta stab Ganon in the eye in order to, you know, make sure, you know, Hyrule doesn't blow up again. But what about that interstitial time of Zelda is trying to run the kingdom and make sure that, you know, war doesn't break out again or whatever.
I did have a moment in this game where it was a cutscene and they were talking about, like, oh, we need to bring Hyrule back to peace. We need, you know, to bring peace back to Hyrule once again, right? And I had this moment where I was like, I've never seen Hyrule at peace.
No.
And then I had a second thought. I had a second thought of, like, why don't you guys just move?
Yeah.
Apparently this place sucks. Why don't we go somewhere else?
Hyrule sucks. Ganon keeps becoming like a giant dragon wizard. There's this dude with a paintbrush that's just making cracks in time and space everywhere.
Property value keeps going up.
The moon is going to crash into us. Why don't we just go? It's like, I remember there was like a stream that I was watching. They were doing some like horror game stream, which a guy proposed an idea for a horror franchise where the canonical ending of every game is hero just leaving. Like, oh, this is a spooky mansion. I'm not going into that. He just gets back in his car and leaves. Zelda is just like, fuck this. I'm gonna go to Lowrule and hang out with Hilda. At least, like, there, it's, like, it's spooky o'clock all the time, but they seem to have managed it.
The gentrification isn't nearly as bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people actually fix things for once. Like, it's been 100 years, and all these different stables and these different landmarks that you come over to have just been left to rot.
I kind of want, like, the end of Breath... Like, again, I haven't beaten it or whatever, but I kind of want the ending of, like, somehow Zelda comes back and it's like, all right, I've been holding off Ganon Wizard for like 100 years and Link did his job. What have you been doing? This place is a mess. What have you people been doing? Like,
and they're like, Zelda, it hasn't, it's been, it's, oh, you must have lost all sense of time.
No,
it's
no,
only
no.
been like
no,
a week.
I've paid attention. I've counted the days. No, the only people that are doing any sort of like work are the Zoras, and the Zoras are actually trying to fix their town up. What are you doing? These stables are terrible. Where is everybody? Like, I would, like, legitimately, I would love that. Like, part of the reason I also really like Breath of the Wild is that, you know, voice acting and cutscenes aside, I actually enjoy the fact that actually within the cutscenes, it's mostly about Zelda's story, about like her dealing with like trying to become like a wizard or whatever. Like, let's be honest, she's becoming trying to become a mage, you know, and like balancing that with wanting to be a studious person and going on an adventure and like doing all these things. And like, I would really like that, to see the daily life of Zelda, which is the next hot new anime coming next season, the daily life of Zelda, just like a 5-minute anime in which she just gets into a goof over and over.
Now, okay.
Yeah.
So, I don't trust the Zelda team to make that game.
No.
Right?
Absolutely not.
So, who makes that game, and why is it Platinum?
Oh, let's get no. Okay, story designed by Platinum, combat designed by Telltale.
Oh, this is cruel. Yeah. This is just,
although,
we're just hitting them while they're down now.
I like both of those companies. I really do, but
I don't.
Oh,
I don't like Telltale.
Oh, I. Well, I
this
mean,
is a
like,
tangent we cannot go on right now.
Okay. Other than I'm trying to think who would do a really good daily life of like Zelda game, and I'm trying to think who would. I don't know. Get the Ace Attorney people to make it a visual novel. I don't know. Like, I mean, at that point, it just is a extended visual novel with a series of choices. So I don't know.
Are you prosecuting the Gorons?
Probably.
Okay.
Well, I don't know.
What did the Gorons ever do?
Yeah, they're
No, that's the problem. What did they ever do? They stood by and twiddled their thumbs while Hyrule burned, literally because they're in a place made of fire.
Yeah, absolutely. And they, like, it's like, you don't distribute any, like, you know all those, like, lizards that keep people from catching on fire? Why aren't you, like, getting more of those and selling them to the townspeople? Get jerks.
Powder kegs for the people.
Powder, yeah. put the means of production back to the people. I don't know. But again, that's just my like idea of a great like Zelda offshoot game in which you get to play as Zelda dealing with like castle politicking or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like even then you could even have like Ganon show up in a way, but he's not just like oh evil wizard that's gonna blow up the earth. You could just have him be like a swarmy like politician at that point. You know, like
that would swarmy politician Ganon is something I would really love to see.
Yeah, you're thinking about it and you're also realizing that's also kind of the best in which like Zelda is like trying to like get some sort of like I don't know, legislator or whatever passed with like or however politics would work in Zelda. I don't know medieval stuff. I wasn't there. I wasn't there when the Zoras were all like give us more water or something. I don't know. But like I kind of like that idea of like he is a slick, smart talking asshole, like self serving, but like his violence isn't through a sword or magic of its words, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like I would enjoy that. I don't know how many other people would enjoy that. I don't know Nintendo would ever make that, but gosh, I would play it.
And one of the game over conditions is you actually push Ganondorf too hard and he turns into Ganon. And then, like, it just cuts to, like, a montage of, like, Link fighting and all this stuff. And Zelda shaking her head and saying, this is going to be so expensive. Game over.
Game over. The castle is, like, no, Link is, like, I did it!
Screwed the economy.
No, it's, like, Link's, like, really proud of himself. And then, like, someone off camera hands him, like, the bill for all the collateral damage.
And as his eyebrows raise, looking at the bill behind him, the castle crumbles.
It's like, and Zelda's just like, you know how to build this? No? You just know how to throw bombs, huh?
Yeah.
Just shut up.
It would be kind of nice to have a sympathetic Ganon for once, actually.
I've always been on the side of, like, it'd be really fun to see a sympathetic or interestingly realized villain. I brought up Link Between Worlds before, but real quick, did either of you play Link Between Worlds?
I played some, yeah.
Like
I have not.
Okay, well, let me just make my point. Like, one of the characters, like, they actually pull off a sympathetic villain in Link Between Worlds I really appreciated, of, like, the idea of, you know, Hyrule is dying, right? And they're, in their mind, they're just like, I'm doing whatever it takes to ensure the survival of this land. Right, and it's obviously not great, and it's, you know, leads to some bad things, but I like that type of villain portrayal of, like, they think they're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can
or like the moon in Majora's Mask.
Well, the Majora's Mask,
I was joking.
The Majora, it's just like, I'm the moon, I'm gonna fall down, eat this.
I really sympathize with that. I'm the moon too.
Hey, that's rough, buddy. My girlfriend became the moon. Life. Yeah. But yeah, like a I'm always down with sympathetic villains in that you at least understand their motivations, which I'm kind of glad. Like, again, don't tell me anything because you seem to have at least done two phases of the Ganon fight. But I did
some stuff.
Yeah, but I like the idea that Ganon right now is just like he's just a total force of nature. He's just a giant wizard dragon at this point, fucking up the land. No, either give me no motivation besides they're evil and shut up, or give me something that is meaningful, you know?
I was gonna try and wrap up, but I actually, now that you brought it up, when did it become the Calamity Ganon? Is that just a Breath of the Wild thing, that he's just Calamity Ganon now, and not just Ganon?
I'm pretty sure that's a Breath of the Wild thing, mostly because of how he interacts with the world. Like, in the Japanese, he's also called, like, Calamity Ganon. Like, not, it's a, that type of translation, but
Just the way they were presenting it in Breath of the Wild made it feel like it's something that I should have known already. And it was like, is this an end of Skyward Sword thing?
Oh, no.
Because I didn't finish that game? Or...
Nah, it's not none of that. It's just the idea of, I think in this particular case, they wanted to focus so much on Link and Zelda being fully fleshed out, or as fleshed out as they wanted to, whatever. And they just needed
Ganon as sort of like a force of nature.
Yeah, and I think that's what they've been implying, especially with, like, Ganon's influence everywhere and, you know, all that muck all over the world. Like, it's implied mm-hmm. that basically he's just, like, you know, just some sort of evil force in the world. He's mm-hmm. not so much a person as, like, we needed to call this, like, thing a name. And Ganon is what we came up with. Like, I don't know if it's implied that Ganon casts a spell or whatever, but I think it's so that you don't have to constantly remind the audience that the villain is bad by having them say things. You just literally look into the world and see the dark cloud of darkness all over Hyrule, and it's like, oh, mm-hmm. this guy's probably bad news. I don't think I want to have lunch with him at all. That would probably be a bad thing.
I won't comment because you told me not to spoil the final fight.
Okay, no, well, I'll come back next. We'll do a recap next week, and I'll say, damn it, Colin, you're absolutely right. This is shit. I don't know. And I completely turned
Ganondorf at a Jimmy John's.
You meet him at a Jimmy. He gets the roast beef and the chili for some reason.
Oh, he's that fucking guy, isn't he?
That guy. He doesn't even leave a tip. What a... God damn it, Ganon, you're such a dick.
And okay, eat this time, Danit and yogurt.
Like, all right, or Danimals. I don't know.
I am not. Given how much we had to say, I am not ruling out the possibility we'll do this again. But I think for now, this is probably going to be a wrap for this podcast.
Yeah, because I got more to play.
and also because, hey, listeners, you want to hear a fun thing? If this podcast gets another, like, 15 minutes longer, my audacity is going to run like shit when I'm editing this.
Okay. Some little Bob Peak, real peek behind the curtain stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I've got a real good computer over here.
Sure.
Andy, thanks so much for joining us. This is really fun.
This was very fun. I appreciate it. And, like, I just really like this game. Like, it's got its issues, but y'all should go play it. It's real good. I think it's a real okay game.
It's a real breath of fresh air.
I'm gonna reach through the computer and just like flick your nose or something. I don't know.
I mean, fair is fair.
Right. Or shave your beard or something. I don't know.
So, if you want to find me or Jen's work, you can find us at scanlinemedia.com. Andy, where can people find you? I know you said at the front, but let's just, you know, front and back.
Front and back. It. Let's sandwich this real Jimmy John sandwich or whatever. I don't know. Find me on Twitter at Zetason03. That's where I mostly, like, shitpost, but I tend to talk about stuff every now and again. Just hit me up. Like, that's where you're going to find most of my stuff. I would stream more if I had the time.
And if you want to get a delicious roast beef sandwich, you can, of course, go to Jimmy John's.
No, we don't go to Jimmy John's anymore because Ganon,
he's a piece of shit.
Because Ganon's there.
I mean, more or less.
More
God
or less.
Damn it,
go
Jimmy
get a
John.
Sandwich at Wawa. Just saying.
All right, folks. Thanks so much for joining us. We will see you next time.
Yep. See you later.
Bye.